Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about Koala, which is a way to check to make sure your code works the way it's supposed to. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb. Episode 415, recorded December 13th, 2016. Koala. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it, projects you may want to download right after this show and play with. Today may be one of those. Joining me today, Aaron Newcomb. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Randall. Good to be here, as always.
And Aaron, thank you for stepping in at the last moment. We had a little bit of a shuffle behind the scenes, but Aaron graciously stepped in at the last moment to be our co-host for today. Aaron, I think we're speaking to you in your man cave, yes?
That's right. That's right. My secret lair right off the main hall of my house. Not really that secret, but this is where I get the work done.
Awesome. Awesome. And I am in the den of my brother who is up in Lacey, Washington, getting a little bit of snow a couple days ago as I arrived back here and hopefully not getting too much snow before I have to take off on Thursday. But we shall see. The Z28, my wonderful vehicle of 125,000 miles so far, is not snow compatible. So I need to make sure that it's not going to be anything sitting on the ground. In fact, when I parked my car, I was actually sitting in snow and couldn't move it away from there until the snow melted just a little bit. So I'm hoping today is not like that. I'm hoping Thursday is not like that. But that's not this week in weather. It's actually Floss Weekly. So we're going to be talking about open source software, this week being no exception to that. We have Koala on today. Koala with a C, not with a K. And preferred lowercase C if you're going to write about this later in your various tweets and other social blogs. Koala is, as they describe at the very top of their page, which I scrolled down from and now can't scroll back to, is linting and fixing code in all languages. This is a really sort of interesting project. So I'm very used to things like lint from the original C. I'm used to things like Perl Critic for Perl. There are various things for Python and Dart code and a bunch of other things that I've used. But here's the thing. You've got to invoke this over and over again. We're using separate tools, separate technologies. What Koala seems to me to be is sort of a unified environment in which to invoke all those various things for something like a couple dozen languages, as I look on the page for that. And looks like a way to bring those all together so you don't have to keep thinking about everybody's. And this is especially useful now when we have projects that span multiple languages, like JavaScript and Node.js is a specific installation of that, TypeScript, HTML, things like that. And so to bring this all together looks like a pretty interesting thing. What do you think so far, Aaron?
Yeah, you know, I've just had time to just read the web page. Beautiful web page, by the way. And so I've kind of got the idea of what it is, but I'm going to try it out while we're talking on some code that I've been working on and see how it goes. I use the Atom IDE, which does some linting and things like that. And it's very configurable for multiple languages. So I'm kind of interesting to see whether what this does in comparison with a general purpose IDE like Atom, and maybe whether the two are compatible. In other words, could I program or use Koala as a plugin to Atom to do all of that for me? It might be actually really interesting.
Yes, well, I bet I know somebody who could answer the very question you just had and more. Let's go ahead and bring on the chief director for the project. That would be Lasse Schuurman. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Nice
Hi,
to be here.
And where are you speaking to us from?
So I'm speaking from Hamburg, from my my small flat here.
Okay, Hamburg. Wow. So you're like, what, 8 time zones ahead of us, maybe? 9?
Like 9, yeah. So it's 6:40 p.m. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you for, I was going to say for staying up, but if you're not up at 6:40 p.m., something's a little wrong. Okay. So give us the 30,000 foot view. What is Koala doing for us? Did I get it mostly right? How did the project get started?
So I think you got it mostly right from the user perspective. So Koala, indeed, for the user, what it does is code analysis for a lot of different languages via one unified interface. But one of the main thoughts of, and that was also how we designed Koala, is it's modular. And the goal is to reduce the redundancy. If you want to start writing a new linter for your gorgeous new programming language, then what you would do without Koala is write a complete new tool. And the thing is that half of the code that you would write is actually already being written, because that's the user interface. And at least the big tools are spending a hell lot of time on the user interface, on the usability, and they all get different usabilities, and that confuses the user. So it's actually bad for everyone. And what this modular concept allows us is to not only wrap existing tools, but make the creation of new static code analysis more easy.
Well, I know that because, you know, I've looked at various tools, like the interface to Perl Critic is very different from the interface to Lint. And yet they're both doing roughly similar things, which is, you know, where are the files that I'm going to scan? Do I perform automatic fixes in those files? I don't think Lint does that, but I know Perl Critic has, Perl Critic doesn't do that either, but imagine something that could actually do automatic fixes. Where's my config file? Where's my, what directories do I descend into, if any? And so on. How is Koala providing this unified interface, and how much work does it take to add it to a new language?
So I think those are two very different questions, if I got them right.
Answer them both eventually then.
Yes. So Koala takes a Koa file, which is like a make file, and we draw specific inspiration from the simplicity of make that I liked. Concerning the invocation, I just type make and it picks up my configuration file and my project gets made. And the same happens with Koala. You have the Koa file, which is a hidden file with a dot in the front, so it doesn't clutter your view. And that is a very simple ini-like file where you can just specify the analysis that you want to run in one line and the files that you wanted to run on in a second line, and then you're basically done. If you want to lint multiple programming languages, you can just make a second ini section, define a second set of analysis on a second set of files, and you're done. So it's one configuration that you can use for your whole project, right? Does that answer your first question?
Yeah.
Okay. And the second one was like, how can you extend it for a new programming language, right?
I think that's close, yeah.
Basically, if you have a new programming language and there is an existing linter for it, then you can wrap that linter very easily into a Koala from the developer side, right? We essentially have a framework that allows you to specify, like, this linter has an output that looks roughly like this, and then you provide a regular expression, and then you will get the results automatically right into Koala. So it's usually a 10-line, 15-minute thing to integrate an existing linter into Koala.
And is that the way that it's mostly done? So that was going to be my first question is, you know, there's all these different programming languages that this supports. Are you getting that compatibility by integrating other linters, or is this done writing its own linters, you know, from scratch?
So it's a combination. We are trying to get more and more native own routines because we think we can write code analysis that actually works on multiple programming languages. We think that we can write code analysis that can work on C, Python, and whatever, and that doesn't necessarily need an AST. So we are currently trying to get ahead on this. But the reality is that nowadays, mostly of what's the most useful functionality is just wrapped existing tools.
Ah, okay. Because I thought, you know, well, you must be a super programmer or something because you know all these languages so well that you've written all these linters. And of course, there's a community involved, and we'll get to that in a minute. But so that makes sense. So you're integrating those other linters. And we should, you know, we should probably back up for a second. Not everyone's a programmer that listens to this. So what is linting anyway? Why do we need linting? What does it do?
So I would define linting as the process of, like, a program would look through your source code and it would annotate your source code in different places, and it would tell you what you can do better. And that helps you being a better programmer, and that helps you writing better source code and avoiding bugs. And this helps you as a company to get more revenue, as a programmer to save time, save frustrations, right? And that's essentially a linter. And if you have a far definition, then a linter can also sometimes automatically fix those things, because in a lot of cases, a lot of linters just complain about tons of white space issues, and that then is totally annoying. If you have to fix 1,000 white space issues manually, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, because for those that don't know, languages like Python, for example, there's tabs versus spaces, and things have to be very specific. So I'm assuming, I'm going to try this in a minute, I think, on one of my Python programs to see how it works. But in Python, you have to be very specific about, you know, indenting, because that's what the interpreter looks for when you run your program, to know, oh, this part of the code is actually a subcomponent of this part of the code. Otherwise, it gets confused. And Python objects when you run it, it objects fairly well. But knowing how to fix that, like you were saying, the white space issue. Mm-hmm. And I imagine this is huge for consistency, right? Because in a big company, you're going to have, 20, 30 programmers maybe working on a single project. So I assume that this can help with consistency issues as well, right?
Certainly. Especially all those code style things. Linting is not only about code style. Especially those code style things, you can usually discuss hours and hours over them, and the result of the discussion is usually actually meaningless. Because whether you put your parentheses on the top of the line or on the next line, in the end, it doesn't really matter. But what matters is that you are consistent. And developers prefer to write their code in a different style. So it's actually very, very convenient to have a tool that actually just, you invoke it after writing your code however you want, and it makes it look right.
Right. And readable, right? I mean, that's important as well, because, when you look at it, when you read any document, really, it's helpful to have things laid out in a certain way that we're used to reading them. I'm assuming, can this be part of a batch process? So like a workflow, programming workflow, where, like you were just saying, a programmer writes their program and then it goes through several stages before it gets published or uploaded into GitHub or some sort of software repository. Could this be part of that workflow, that it goes through Koala before it gets to that final stage?
Certainly. There are many, many different options to integrate a tool like Koala into your workflow. I could name three of them on the top of my head. In your case, you use Atom, right? You just told us. And for Atom, we actually do have an editor plugin, and you could configure Koala. You could tell it, for any Python code style issue, automatically fix my code without asking me. And with the editor plugin in Atom, you would just, whenever you save your file, your code would be re-indented and it would be beautified in the way that is configured in your project configuration.
Right. Cool.
The second option is, and a lot of people do pre-commit hooks. That is essentially a script that gets run whenever you commit your code into the version control system, right? I'm not sure how to explain this very briefly for the non-technical people out there. But essentially, it would, whenever you say, like, my code is ready and you give it out for review, it will automatically reformat it and make it look right. So this is a common option that can easily be used with any command line interface tool like Koala.
Right.
And the third option, and that's actually the only one that works for the whole team, is if you are on GitHub or something, if you use a tool like GitHub for a code review, then you can actually have a tool like Koala running in your continuous integration, or you can have a bot that runs Koala on an own server and comments about the code style issues right in the code review UI. And this is actually one of the things that I am very, very enthusiastically developing on, and that we're trying to found a startup on top of Koala, to provide the software as a service, which would comment on your, right in your code review, about all your issues. And then as a human, you have your machine code review right in the same place as the human code review.
That's really cool. That's exactly what I was hoping for. I noticed when I was looking to install this, there's Koala, again, which to remind everybody, that's with a C, but there's also Koala Bears. Can you explain what the bears are? Is that separate from Koala itself?
Yeah. So Koala itself is a framework for writing code analysis, right? So Koala provides you with a binary that you can use as a user to configure and use code analysis. But we wanted anyone to be able to submit packages containing code analysis for Koala to PyPI, because that's our way of distributing Koala and code analysis. And so what we did was we split up the core, the Koala, which is the actual application, from all the code analysis. And all the code analysis is in this Koala Bears package. And we call every analysis routine a Koala Bear.
Now, I noticed that I've got to use pip3. I'm just installing this right now. Does that mean this is only compatible with Python 3?
Yes. You need Python 3 to run Koala. You can run Koala also in Python 2 code, though the support is not as good as Python 3 because we use Python 3 ourselves. And it's just not a priority. And if you have an open source community like us, and there's almost no money involved, then people will go for the fun thing, right?
Yeah, because I know, but it doesn't matter what, I don't have pip3 installed. It doesn't matter what you're analyzing. It's going to run in Python 3, so you need to have Python 3 installed. But it doesn't matter what code you're analyzing. That doesn't really have an impact. So I'm going to have to play around with this a little bit more and install Python 3. I guess I don't have Python 3 installed.
On the current website, that's something I just added, I think, yesterday. We have a Docker command that allows you to run Koala inside a Docker image. And that's one command that allows you to run Koala right ahead without installing anything except Docker, if you have Docker.
Oh, nice.
And it's a huge image because it contains all the code analysis and all the dependencies of Koala. And that's like a lot of linters for over 60 languages.
That's really cool. And I'm just looking on the website now. So there's here it is. Yeah, you can use Docker. Docker run. Oh, very cool. Now, is this something that's come from just your interest in doing it in Docker, or is it more convenient for people to do it this way as Docker is becoming more popular?
It was one of the contributors who came up, I think, a few days ago, and he was like, hey, I never use Koala outside Docker because of the dependencies, and it's so much easier to just run it in Docker. And we were like, hey, let's put that on the website.
Yeah, this is really cool. How many I don't want to jump the gun here. I was going to talk about contributors, but I mean, how many contributors do you have? And this is important because there's just so much to pull from. There's so many languages that you support. So let's start there. How many languages do you support?
I think at the moment we support 61 languages.
Wow.
Let me look it up. I usually, the number changes every time I talk about this. so this time it's 61. those also include things like markdown or restructure text, which is, I think, important because usually people don't think as their documentation as something valuable and something that they can actually be helped with using a linter or so as well. And if you use Koala, you already have a config file. It's just a three-line addition to also check your documentation. And that's, I think, very important, but also a thing to note, right? So our community has had over 200 contributors overall. It's very hard to say what the number of actual contributors is. I can look at the latest statistics on OpenHub, but I would guess it's around 20 to 30 people.
I was just going to say there's got to be a tool to do that so you can actually find out how many people are contributing to your project.
And you definitely need a tool. In October, we had 35 unique contributors across all the Koala repositories, because we have heavily modularized, at least as much as we can, everything, so we can keep up to date with it.
So what license did you release this under?
So Koala and the Bears is licensed under AGPL, because we didn't want people to use it and modify it as a service without releasing the source code to their users.
And you mentioned something like that earlier, that one of your goals perhaps is to provide this as a platform, as a service sort of thing. What would that entail? And has that been your driving force all along?
We are trying to make a software as a service platform, but every change that we do to Koala should be open source as well. And that is essentially what the license entails. The license does not say that our whole platform has to be open source, although I would actually like that. If companies would still buy it, I would totally do it. Having a proprietary piece of software is actually like, it seems to be a must-have thing to convince people to actually buy a product. But as long as the tool that is under AGPL licensed runs in an own process, everything that is isolated from that process does not fall under the same license.
So you would expect then that I would, as a customer of yours, add something pointing at your servers as GitHub hooks or something, so that as I'm pushing stuff up to my GitHub repo or whatever else repo it can be hooked in like this, and I pay you a small amount per month per repo or something like that to provide you with a cash flow. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, that's it essentially. Okay. The webhook usually gets added automatically, so you don't have to fiddle with that manually.
Well, okay, yeah, some mechanism involved with that. I'm actually not entirely familiar with GitHub webhooks. I'm more used to doing my own Git servers and things like that. So that probably wasn't the original motivation for Koala, though. So what were you doing where you said, I think we really need to unify all this? Were you frustrated with maybe the fact that everything had a different interface?
Okay, that's a fun story. So I did not start Koala because I saw there was a problem. And actually, it was not even me who started the project. Back, I think, three and a half years ago, I was writing an operating system kernel, and I had a friend who was studying mechanical engineering, and I was like, hey, do you want to help with this operating system kernel? It's written in C, and it's a lot of fun. And he was like, well, you got to be kidding me. I'm not writing C code for a kernel. So he started writing some code analysis just for fun. And at some point, my kernel got to a stage where I couldn't learn so much anymore from it, and it wasn't anymore so fun. So I switched over and helped him with that project. And actually then we found that people would find it useful. And we just found the project idea lying around there before us. And it took us another year or so to actually find out how we could explain to people what is unique. And that is essentially how the idea grew up from being, hey, let's do something fun, to actually, we are doing something useful, and we have transformed our funny thing into something that people need and that people want.
And one of the things you mentioned earlier was that you're building, besides the very specific language things, like, say, I'm most familiar with Perl, so let's do talk about Perl Critic. The Perl Critic actually uses a pseudo Perl parser. You can't have an accurate Perl parser, but that's a whole nother show to describe why. But a pseudo Perl parser to build essentially an internal AST, and then it can make analyses based on that. But you also mentioned that you don't need an AST for some of the more common things that are cross-language. Does that mean you're using something like regular expressions to recognize common issues, or am I missing the point there?
So Koala itself has one mechanism that I find is very important to this, and this is the dependency mechanism. So Koala allows you to define two bears that depend on each other. So I could write one bear that creates an AST, or actually any information about whatever code I have there. And I could have a second bear that would consume that AST and that would build something from this. And this architecture allows you to modularly build more information about your programming language, about your source code, onto your source code. And you could selectively just get this information that is actually possible to get for your programming language. So if your programming language has lambdas, I could write a bear that would detect what is actually a lambda and where do I find them in the source code. Mm-hmm. And I could use any bear that depends on this bear if that programming language has lambdas. But if it doesn't, I can still use all the other bears and I can still use all the other functionality. And that means that this construct that we're building, you can choose whatever works for you instead of everything only works for one programming language, right? So this is the high-level overview. And to make this a bit more specific, because this is rather hard to grasp and very non-concrete, right? For example, what we have right now is we have a bear that finds out where your comments and where your strings are in your source code. So that's a very simple task, and it relies on some very simple definitions. It relies on the bear knowing how a string starts, how a string ends, how does an escaping work, how does a comment start, and so on. And those are very simple things that you can write down in a language definition. So we have written those bears based on language definitions that annotate the source code and that show you those are strings, those are commands. And then you can build more and more information based on that. And then you can build bears that actually do things that are useful for the user. Like I recall, I think half a month ago, I wrote code analysis. I wrote a bear that would check all your strings. And if you said in your project, you would prefer single quotes versus double quotes, and it would find a string with double quotes where there is no single quote within it that would need to be escaped, then it would actually correct your string to use the right quotes. And this would work completely language independent based on this architecture.
Awesome. No, that's amazing. So let me make sure I understand this by providing a parallel example. So, you know, internationalization is a big thing, especially when you're not an American. So maybe something that would analyze all the strings to see if they have the proper internationalization hooks to be able to have the multivariance and things like that. Would that be something then that I could build a module that's about internationalization and then apply it to the individual analyses for pulling strings out? Would that be something similar?
Yes, exactly. And the great thing is you would have to build it only once, and it would work for Perl and for Python and for any language that would use strings, and for that you would know enough about internationalization to make this happen.
That sounds awesome. I wanted to back up just a step again. I know Aaron sort of got some of this, but why do we need linting? I think a good analogy, and tell me if I'm wrong, is something like, well, the compiler can reject syntactically invalid programs, but that's like saying when you're writing English, we have sentences that are well formed, but don't make any sense when put with each other. And this would be sort of the next tool up that would say that this sentence followed by that sentence don't make a lot of sense or are grammatically awkward. Is that closer to what a linter is doing, not rejecting things that are syntactically invalid, but rather things that sort of don't make sense either individually or against some sort of standard that we're coding to?
Basically, yes. You can extend this from any level to any level. For some languages, it actually makes sense to have linters or to have a linting component that actually only checks the syntax. Because if you have Python, you have no compiler. You will see the syntax errors only when you run the module. And then you will want to guarantee that your code is actually syntactically correct. So you could start as small as that. But you can also go further and further. And if you look at C, you can do analysis like there you use string copy and you don't give it a length, and there might be some buffer overflow, and therefore your program might be hacked, right? And lots of different possible things that you can check.
And so it sounds like you've got a number of contributors providing various languages for you. How has that been for you? I mean, you put out the call there and people just start plopping in. Have you gotten more response than you expected? Is it about what you expected? What's the most surprising thing about getting this project started so far?
So when we started this project, I worked a lot alone on it. And I had a few students in the area that would help me whenever they had time with code reviews, with writing code. And at some point in the beginning of this year, we started coming out of our cave, essentially. And we began to show up on conferences. And we began doing things like going to a hackathon or participating in an online hackathon, participating in Google Summer of Code. Mm. And we noticed that we would have a lot of people who would come for those initiatives. I recall the first really, really big spike of people coming in was when we participated in the Hacker Earth hackathon. And we were one of the first projects to be listed on their website. And I think we had over 100 people bumping into our chat just due to that hackathon.
Mm.
But what we also noticed was, or one thing that from the very beginning I wanted was to have a very, very, just an awesome newcomer experience for new contributors. I myself started out as a GNOME contributor. I did my Google Summer of Code with GNOME. For those who don't know, Google Summer of Code is a scholarship for students under the motto "Flip bits instead of burgers," and this was a life-changing experience for me. And I learned a hell lot during this Google Summer of Code. Way more than any year in the university would have taught me. And this essentially got me started with open source. But what I noticed was that it was very, very hard for a newcomer to actually find something to work on and find something that is like entry-level difficulty. And I had the luck that I was during this Google Summer of Code. So I wrote someone an email, and he would propose me an issue to work on. And I would work on that issue, and it would cost me like 4 to 6 hours to solve this rather simple issue. And that was then a good experience. But without this personal contact, I wouldn't have been able to do that. And what we see here is that this personal contact that just doesn't scale. It does not work with a lot of newcomers bumping onto the newcomer page, bumping onto the project, because most of them were just come on the website and they will see, maybe they will look for issues, but they will not find anything they could seriously work on. And what we did from the beginning was we had very, very strict code reviews and very strict quality guidelines, which were all inspired by the GNOME guidelines. But we had a newcomer process of sorts. We had newcomer issues. We had a GitHub label that would be basically reserved for newcomers. And I'm not even sure how it was in the beginning this year, but very, very soon, this was only an issue like fix a typo. So it was something ridiculously easy. And this issue was meant to teach the people just about how do we work together here? How can I submit something? How do I get it reviewed? And how do I get it accepted? Because this, like, one very, very hard thing to learn when joining an open source community. I think this is the biggest thing to do, having newcomer issues. And I think it's great. More and more communities nowadays realize that they need this. But we noticed we can go further and we can make not only newcomer difficulty issues, we can actually make low and medium and high ones so people could climb up the ladder. And we would try to respond ASAP whenever anybody would ask a question. And it was all those little things that we did that actually kept all of those newcomers, or a lot of those newcomers, in our community. And I think those things we did were a major reason why this community is so big and growing so fast, and why this community is so successful. And it wouldn't have been that otherwise, because who cares about code analysis? I mean, a lot of people use it, but not a lot of people think about, hey, let's write code analysis. It's usually this boring university stuff that nobody wants to have anything to do with.
Yeah, I was going to say it is one of the things, like, I'm glad somebody else wrote Lint. I'm glad somebody else wrote Perl Critic, because I can use those and take advantage of those. And I'm actually really excited that you were able to discover reducing the barrier to entry, because I know so many open source projects never get to that. It's like, where would I start if I wanted to contribute to, say, GNU Emacs? I don't know. I have contributed to GNU Emacs, but it was all accidental. It was like I just posted something and somebody said, oh, that belongs in Emacs. I said, okay, great, put it there. I do want to bring up, though, that on a slightly related topic, we were talking about linters earlier. Micro in the chat room says, linters can also show variables that are not used, or code that will never be run, like code after a return, or maybe code that's potentially inside a conditional that's always false or something. I like that linters can take care of that. So, one of the things I wanted to follow up with, and I know Aaron's actually been installing this thing, and he wants to talk to you a little bit about some of the errors he's seen. So we'll get to him in just a second. But I wanted to follow up. So these contributors, they're writing code that's against some sort of APIs, these bears that they're creating. So they have to plug into some sort of larger framework. Is that framework versioned? Have you made changes in it? Have you done anything that you said, well, we actually should have done this before, that you wish you regret, or you regret now? And if so, how has that process been to be able to create a framework for an API for people to contribute into and then have to sort of live with that as people are making their contributions?
Yes, this is kind of a problem. So far, we have been very liberate with our API. Koala is currently running under version 0.9, which means it's an alpha release, or it's a pre-production release, just from speaking from the version numbers, although it is used in production by companies and by a lot of people. But one major thing about this is that we are not fully sure yet about what API we want to have in our final release. We are getting very, very close to having this API, but we're just not fully sure. We haven't made actually huge changes to the Bear API itself. We found out that it's rather beautiful how it fell. It is a bit of luck every time, right? But whenever we do API changes, we deprecate them. We usually make like a wrapper available so that you can use your... Sorry. That was weird. We usually make a wrapper such that you can use the old API and you would get a warning that this API is deprecated. And in order to support the next release, you will have to use that new API. But I'm not even sure that happened even once to the Bear IPA itself. And usually that worked well, very well out. Yeah.
So I've got a question about actual installation, because as Randall said, I've been trying this and there's a couple issues that I guess I want viewers to know if they're excited, they're listening to this or watching this and they're excited to try it. If you're like me, you may get some errors when you try to install this. So the first one I got was an expected version error, I guess, because my version of pip, and pip is the Python package installer tool. So if you're familiar with Python, you probably know what pip is. But anyway, I was getting a version expected version spec error. And you nicely documented that in your right where the installation is. It says if you're getting errors, click here. And I did. And so I was able to set up a virtual environment with an updated version of pip to use to try to install and run this. But then now I'm getting an insecure platform warning error. It says Koala supports only Python 3.4 or later, and I'm actually running 3.4.2. Is this a common error? So I should say I tried to install this on a Raspberry Pi, and I also installed it on Ubuntu userland running under Windows 10. So those are my two things I'm trying this on.
So the first error is very common, which is why we try to make it very well documented, because it affects the old Ubuntu long-term support release and most Debian users. Mm-hmm. If you have any idea on how we can document this error better, please say so or file an issue. We love it if people file issues. We love to know about bugs versus not knowing about them, right? The second error doesn't ring a bell for me right now.
It's complaining about SSL approach. Connections, the SNI extension to TLS is not available on this platform. So it's something like it's
good.
Yeah, on both, and of course these are both Debian platforms. So yeah, it looks like it's doing some sort of a security check for SSL connections and it's failing. I'm happy to take this and file a bug if you want.
is it pip doing this security check?
This is on the pip install koala-bears, and I'm running it as sudo. So
maybe it's a proxy issue or something. I have heard people having issues when using proxy, and this sounds like something that could remotely have something to do with that.
Yeah, I'm not running any proxies. So anyway, I'll try to figure this out. We probably won't have time on the show, but I just wanted to let people know, because I know a lot of people run Debian either because they're running Ubuntu or Linux Mint or something that runs Debian underneath, or they're, you know, like me trying to install this on a Raspberry Pi just for fun, then, you know, something to watch out for. And I'll try to look into this and maybe we can see if we can figure out exactly why we can't get it installed. But I'm anxious to try this. So I'm going to keep trying after we stop here. Kind of curious too, you mentioned that you were part of Google Summer of Code. How long ago was that, and especially in relationship to this project? Were there years in between, or did you start this right after? And I may have missed it in your previous answer.
So my own Google Summer of Code with GNOME was 2014, I guess.
Okay, so just a few years ago.
Yeah, so it was just a few years ago. I'm actually still a student, though I mostly study for fun, because it really helps keeping the mind open, finding new subjects to explore, especially software verification lately, which is something I wouldn't have looked into it in that theoretical depth otherwise. So basically, this project was going on rather passively during my Google Summer of Code, and it basically took off afterwards with our local people, like with our 2-3 people. And nice. the real boost to the community, that was all this year when we essentially craved out of our cave, and we thought, well, now we have something that actually that's useful and that people might want, so let's talk about this, let's go to a hackathon. We actually had a first contributor, the first contributor you don't know, right? That was very exciting, and that was a guy from Berlin, and that was well, nobody knew what Koala was, and we had never spoken at any conference, and apparently he probably found it through Google or something, and that was very exciting. Yeah, that was in December or November last year, I think.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it is kind of cool when someone finds your project and you haven't really been advertising it or anything, and then just by luck or Google searches or whatever, they come across it and you're like, hey, how'd you find it? I'm not really talking about this yet. How'd you do that? We do have a question from the audience. This is from Micro in the chat room. And this relates to what we were talking about before, trying to get this installed. He said there are 283 issues if you go back to as far as January 2015 already registered. So how often are these issues looked at?
We usually don't look through all of the issues. We regularly look at certain areas of issues, like before a release, we usually check all issues that are tagged with bug. But essentially, the way we handle our issue database is, I think we have to accept that it will grow and it will not stop growing unless we really aggressively start closing issues. And the most important issues, the things that are annoying the users the most, they will pop up on the top often. And they will get more present in our minds on their own. And because of that, I think that our current policy isn't that bad, that we accept that we have a lot of issues. We, of course, look at the bugs regularly, because those are the ones that are keeping users from using the tool. And we sometimes do like focused days, when I look at new feature requests and I'm trying to go through them, or when we just look at the old bugs. But we never need to look through everything at once, because when a project grows, I think it's important to accept that software development is incremental, because a piece of software usually at some point grows beyond the brain of one person. And that is just something to accept. But that's awesome. My opinion. And I think that there might be others out there.
Oh, that's great. That's really great. Hey, we're almost out of time, but I did want to first touch on, if we can touch on it briefly, what is Gitmate.io and how is that applicable maybe somewhat to Koala, or maybe it's unrelated?
So Gitmate is the software as a service that I talked about earlier. Gitmate does the automatic code review on your GitHub repository. And currently, this is a prototype that runs on a server that I rented. So it's really not production quality. But it shows you what you can do with it. And the two main values that you get when using Gitmate, when using Koala, is that first, you can enforce using Koala for the whole team without actually installing it at every developer's PC and forcing every developer to run it every time. You have a guarantee because it happens on the server. It happens when you submit your code for review. And the second really big value is that you can use it for legacy code. Gitmate is essentially, let's start it the other way around. Koala analyzes your whole source code. And it will get you maybe 1,000 of results and thousands of results for old code, for example. And you will not be able to sanely look through all of them. Of course, you can let it automatically fix it and look through the diff, at least for the code style issues. But if you have 100 code duplication issues, this is going to be really hard to refactor. And this is the point where we have the same thing. We need an incremental method of improving our software versus just looking at the state of it. And Gitmate does this by integrating Koala in your code review process. And it essentially looks over every commit, and it looks at your code before the commit using Koala and after the commit using Koala. And then it actually diffs the results. So you will see all the new results, even if they are outside of your diff in Git. But you will get all the new results and not the old ones. And you can focus on improving the code that actually changes in your code base.
Awesome. Awesome. And like I said, we're almost out of time. Is there anything we didn't ask that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
I'm not fully sure. So if you are interested in joining or in Google Summer of Code or in open source, then there is one link I would like to give out, which is koala.io/Romania, because we have an event on Bucharest on Thursday that will be live streamed, where we talk about Google Summer of Code and all those topics. And I think we already have over 100 registrations locally. And this might be very interested to people who are looking to get started in open source at any community, not only Koala.
That's pretty awesome that this is a fairly young project and you already have meetups about it. I'm pretty excited by that. It sounds like you've made a lot of progress with this, and I wish you more success in the future. I have two final wrap-up questions that I must ask, or I actually do get audience members that yell at me. So your favorite scripting language would be?
Python.
Yeah, I figured that. Yay! Answer already. Looking at that, yeah, I know. And Python 3 in particular, which sort of is interesting.
Python 3 in particular, yes. Hated it. I hated it when my friends started Koala. I couldn't bear it. I wanted parentheses. I wanted brackets. And it took me some time, but it's those things you need to get accustomed to, right? But I think Python is such a great language. It grows with you. You can start very easy, and you can get very, very advanced and use all the nifty features.
And if you want parentheses and brackets, you should be using Perl 6. But okay, I'll just stop there. and in Unicode, you can have whatever parens you want. And your favorite, your primary text editor.
That's a good question. I don't have a primary text editor. Well, I mostly use PyCharm Community Edition for Python coding. I usually try out Atom nowadays for non-Python stuff usually, which gets a bit more lately. And for short edits, I use Vim.
Very cool. Very well.
Oh my God. That gave me a lot of hatred, yes. I guess.
Well, no. Vim's fine. Atom's fine. Those are all fine text editors and fine languages, just not the ones I use. But that's okay. Well, let me see if I can mispronounce your name just one more time here. So, Laza, something close to that. Thank you for being on the show and talking to us about Koala, and hopefully some more people will at least be users, if not also be contributors. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
Awesome. That was Laza Schuerman talking to us about Koala. What'd you think there, Aaron?
Well, it's interesting. I'm still working on trying to get this thing installed, and I've gotten some progress, but I've got another error now. It looks like there's an error in the documentation that tells you how to fix that error, because you have to use pip 3 to install. But in the installation document, if you're getting this error, do this. It says you just use regular pip down at the last install command. That should be pip 3. So I'm getting further, but I'm still failing. So I hope I can work through this. I'm going to keep plugging away at it and maybe go online and do some research and see if I can get it to work. So overall, I think this is it's a good effort. It's a good project. It'll certainly help developers, certainly something that's required. As you alluded to at the beginning of the show, kind of a proliferation of different linters or helpers to try to fix, correct, standardize code that programmers are writing is a problem. And while some of that has been taken care of to some degree, I think having a one tool like this that programmers could go to, or that you could put into a batch process or use a hook to run right before it gets published would be really, really useful. So, I think this is definitely one to watch, especially if you're in software development.
Well, my primary client right now, ZipRecruiter, has a project that probably typical of many modern companies, has a project that has Perl code, Python code, HTML, JavaScript in less format as well. So there's all these different things in Java code too, because they have an iOS app. So they have all these things that have to be brought together. Not Java code, it would be Objective-C. Well, whatever. Okay. So no Android app yet, but that may be coming. there is some Java though, but it's for something else, and I don't know exactly what. I just pay attention to the Perl part. But it would be nice to have, on our local Git repository. I think we use GitLab, we being a ZipRecruiter there. Do be able to have a hook that says, here are the at least suggested changes, but even maybe enforce it as policy. Like if you don't keep Koala happy, you'll have to bear the changes. Oh, did I just go there? Yes, I just went there. you'll have to bear the results of your failure. I also wanted to point out that unlike other news shows about open source, we actually get our hands dirty. I want to thank you, Aaron, for attempting an install and getting real-time tech support from the project creator. You do that a lot on this show.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, if you hear about a good, I don't know, for me, it's like, ooh, that sounds fun. Go do it. I don't know. Maybe I'm like a dog, when he sees a squirrel or something. But when I find something, and I have everything set up here. So when I find something that may be useful or sounds interesting, I want to run it so I can get some real-time feedback. Because one of the things that I think it's hard as a viewer or a listener to know is, and we try to ask this question, we covered it a little bit today, is how hard is this to actually install? It sounds cool, but if it takes me 20 hours to get a project or a program running, is it really worth it? So I think it's something that's useful to go do for our viewers and listeners, if not for our own benefit.
Well, I'd say even our audience members that would take longer than 2 hours to install something like this might be pretty frustrated, and it would tell me that something needs to be done upstream to make sure that this works that way. So like I said, we're almost out of time. So let me go ahead and wrap up the rest of the show. We do have next week, we have Twine, which is you're writing your own maze full of twisty time passages all like. Interactive fiction, but done actually on a really slick-looking web UI that can either be run as a platform on their servers, or you can download the whole thing, run it on your server to build these interactive fiction things. So like if somebody picks up a rock, it may take them one direction. If somebody picks up a diamond, they'd take them a different direction, and so on. All done graphically with very, very cool stuff. Anyway, after that, FreeDOS, just like it sounds. DOS, built for free from scratch. So you can run all those DOS games if you can figure out how to get them into your system. OpenHMD, which is head-mounted displays, a big new thing coming out, especially with Oculus being a little more popular now. People getting a free Oculus with their Android phones, which is sort of fun for some carriers. OpenNMS, which is carrier-grade network monitoring tools. So if you think maybe Nagios, things like that, but this is at a much higher level, been around. It's a much longer project, actually, I think, than Nagios. PG Backrest, which is the online backup and restore for Postgres. Sounds like a lot of fun. Sounds you can do it now, but this is kind of automates the whole thing and makes it all really cool. Eclipse Shay, which is a developer workspace server and cloud IDE for Eclipse. This is the kind of thing that Code Envy runs as a commercial service, but you can also run all the code directly for yourself. We'll be talking to one of the lead developers for that. And just added to the schedule, and Aaron, you'll be happy about this, we talked to Arduino back in 2009, but I think a few things have happened in the Arduino project since 2009, so we're bringing them back on early in January, midway through January, I think it is, something like that. So we'll have you and Guillermo actually fight over who gets to be the co-host for that particular show. So that's who we've got coming up. You can go to the big spreadsheet at twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for the show. It's linked from there. That tells you who we're also working on to try to get them on. If you have any other suggestions, please tell the project leader to email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. That address is also on the homepage for the show. We are still booking one or two remaining dates in Q1, opening up Q2, possibly even Q3 by the time you hear this. We have a live stream with a couple of questions and comments from there at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays at live.twit.tv. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google+, and also at Floss Weekly on Twitter. We automatically tweet over to that. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google+. Which also automatically tweets over to Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, not the Disney spelling, but the actual spelling, and also over to Facebook. So my Google+ postings also end up over there. Just by the way, last week I did mention the Lions commentary book. Almost immediately, somebody sent me an Amazon link for it, so I went and bought it. So here's my copy if you're watching the video. I actually have not had a chance to crack it open, but got a lot of geek kudo points for actually now having a copy of this book. Some people even reporting they had a sixth generation photocopy of it, and another person saying they had it printed out on line printers. So this is definitely something that y'all should look at. And it has not been a rainy afternoon yet. I will definitely read this on a rainy afternoon. I have flipped through it. So that's a really nice, cool thing. Also, the Twit Network wants everybody to know that we are doing a best of episode for all the shows on Twit this year. Please visit twit.tv/bestof, B-E-S-T-O-F, to submit your favorite moment of 2016 on Floss Weekly. You can just fill out a short form there with the show name, episode number, and Twit time code, or Twim code there. Also, there is Twit Army gear. These shirts and hoodies are designed by the Twit staff, come in a variety of colors. If you order before December 15th, so you got 2 days to do that if you're watching the live show or watch or listen to this on the same day, the shirts will arrive before Christmas. Go to Teespring, T-E-E, two E's, spring.com/twit to order yours today. So my plugs, I'm going to be at Yapsi and OSCON coming up next year, hopefully DragonCon and Fizzlay. Possibly FOSDEM, that possibility reducing day by day because I'm really not getting my act together to be able to be in Brussels in February. That seems like less and less possible every day. But maybe I'll be at FOSDEM. We'll see. Any plugs you want to make, Aaron, before we get going?
Yeah, sure. So if anyone's still listening at this point, you can follow me on I'm Aaron Newcomb on all the social networks. I also run Benicia Makerspace. If you're in Northern California area, anywhere north of San Francisco, and you're looking for a good makerspace, we even have people coming from San Francisco occasionally to take our classes. So we must be doing something right, because that's a fair drive up that way. Also, still working on my book Linux for Makers. So it's coming along really, really nicely. It looks like I'm already referencing it myself, which is a good sign. So be on the lookout for that in bookstores and online this spring. Put it on your to-do list. Set a reminder. Use Google Home and set yourself a reminder to go get that book. And then I will be on the new Screensavers this Saturday. So you can tune in and watch live or pick that up on the reruns. We're going to be talking. I'm hopefully going to be bringing some projects I've been working on integrating Google Home with things like light switches and doorbells, not the Philips Hue stuff like DIY. I'm talking DIY, open your garage door with Google Home, that kind of thing. So I'll be hopefully demonstrating that on Saturday. So tune in and check that out as well. I think that's about it.
Awesome, Aaron. And thank you again. As I said at the beginning of the show, top of the show, thank you for stepping into the last minute and subbing for someone who was having a plumbing problem. And I don't mean a Unix pipe. I mean the actual kind of pipes that you have to have things occasionally get fixed for. So thank you once again for joining me. And sure. Happy holidays to all those that won't be hearing any more show. Well, we do have one more show before Christmas, or maybe two more. Let's see. Yeah, at least one before Christmas, and for all the other holidays that are celebrated through this period, happy holidays. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.